It's time for From the Short Grass with Trey Schaap, a golf podcast for those who love golf, struggle with golf, and just like to enjoy the outdoors and fellowship with friends, all while chasing a ball around trying to put it in a 4 1/4 inch diameter hole. From the Short Grass is brought to you by Stevens Incorporated, an independent financial services firm with the freedom to focus on what matters most. Blackman Auctions. For over 80 years, better auctions have always been Blackman Auctions. Beachwood Pinnacle Hotels. We partner with you to deliver high-yield results by managing, developing, and investing in top-quality hospitality assets. And now, from the Short Grass, here is your host, Trey Schaap.
Welcome to another edition of From the Short Grass. I am your host, Trey Schaap. Coming up in this episode of From the Short Grass, I get on to the Zoom and I sit down with Caddy Tales author Mark Mylitz. Mark ran into a rough patch in his life and after a series of bad decisions decided that he would be a caddy. So he turned to caddying out of desperation. And in his search for lost golf balls, trying to get the right yardage for his player, making sure the clubs were cleaned, he found hope, healing, and growth. In his book, Caddy Tales, A Looper's Search for Lost Golf Balls and What He Found Instead, you will learn about his life journey. Mark is a caddy at Whistling Straits in Kohler, Wisconsin, one of the most iconic places to play golf in the world. It hosted the Ryder Cup the last time it was on U.S. soil. In fact, the Ryder Cup will be back on U.S. soil in 2025 at Bethpage Black. So his story is coming up in this episode of From the Short Grass. I think you will be really entertained by his story. He's got a great northern accent as well, and I think you will enjoy listening to him. If you're a non-golfer, I think you will be inspired as well that it's not just golf balls that you can find when you're on a golf course. And so this book kind of brings that out. Blackman Auctions. Since 1938, better auctions have always been Blackman Auctions. If you love going to auctions and just like to see how they work, go to one of these Blackman Auctions that are upcoming. You can find them all on the website, blackmanauctions.com. We're back with Mark Mylitz, the author of Caddy Tales, after this. Stay with us.
Heading to El Dorado to check out some live music or to play Mystic Creek? Stay at the Haywood, the only boutique hotel in the middle of downtown and the Murphy Arts District. If you are spending a weekend in Hot Springs, make plans now at the Marriott Courtyard close to Lake Hamilton and Oaklawn. Beachwood Pinnacle Hotel Group manages both of these fine properties, and you will rest easy knowing that your every need is taken care of. Beachwood Pinnacle Hotels on the web at bphotels.com.
At Stevens, our philosophy is to invest every dollar as if it were our own. To seize opportunity. To anticipate rather than react. To deliver constant focus in an ever-changing world. And to pursue the objectives of our clients in order to help them reach their financial goals. A proven history of helping companies and individuals. Stevens, member NYSE SIPC.
This is Thomas Blackman of Blackman Auctions. Looks like this podcast has really taken off. The guests are incredible. Stories are captivating. It might be Trey's hard work and dedication to the sport of golf and his sincere interest in his guests. Or could be the support of an 85-year-old auction company that does real estate and industrial auctions all over the country and is owned by a guy that doesn't play golf worth a flip. You guys listen to the podcast. I think you know the answer. If you want to learn about the game of golf, listen to Trey. If you want to know about auctions, call me. Since 1938, better auctions are Blackman Auctions.
Welcome back to this edition of From the Short Grass. On the tee, Mark Mylitz.
Mark Mylitz, thanks for joining me on From the Short Grass. When did you first pick up a golf club, or better yet, when did you first fall in love with a game of golf?
First picked up a golf club back when I was, in middle school and sporadically in high school. Then really didn't play for quite a while through college and stuff. I would say in my late 20s, getting involved like in a men's church league golf. I really enjoyed that. That was something I looked forward to every week. I really enjoyed the social aspect of it a great deal. That's one of the things I've always loved about golf. And then again, I took another kind of break as I had kids growing and stuff, and really would not have considered myself a golf lover or passionate until I began caddying 5 years ago at Whistling Straits. Then I really, you know, just rekindled and then started to be so immersed in the game that I began to appreciate it in ways that I had never really had the opportunity to before.
Why did you start caddying? What led to that?
Yeah. So I just went through some really rough patch in my life, in my professional life and in my personal life. I just had a lot of depression and anxiety, and that led to some poor choices. It led to needing to make a change and a move with my family. And so we decided to come here to Wisconsin, near where my wife grew up. She actually grew up on a farm just around the corner from Whistling Straits. And it was really just a kind of meant to be a stopgap to caddy there. It was not something I intended to do for a long, long time. And just immediately started enjoying it and really saw that it could be something more than I had previously thought.
Obviously, caddying at Whistling Straits, I mean, that is a place that is revered by golfers worldwide as a place that they want to go and play. And I'm sure you see all types of golfers there along the coast of Lake Michigan.
Yeah. No, you really do. You see, you know, some really, like, just very low handicap players and scratch golfers and even people who are trying to go on to some sort of competitive golf. You definitely have that. And then you definitely have people who say they haven't picked up a club in a few years or play once or twice a year. And this is their chance to come out on a big business trip or on a annual buddies trip or whatever. And then there's a whole lot in between, but we always try to tell people, or at least I do, at the first tee box, the players who are nervous, that we've seen everything and we're not going to be surprised. So just calm down and enjoy the day.
You say you've seen everything. I'm sure that includes all types of weather and all types of golf.
Oh yeah. You know, the weather can just switch in a crazy way. And we've had days, you know, not often, but we get days over 100 degrees, especially with the heat index. And if we get a west wind, a wind not coming off the lake, it's like a sauna out there. And then we have caddied in 30 degrees and sleet and snow and 40 mile an hour winds and driving rains. And you know, every day brings some challenges, certainly with the wind as it picks up in the afternoon. But yeah, tons of weather differences out there. And a lot of people are surprised to find out, especially because I'm a, you know, a bigger guy and I sweat a lot, that I prefer the hot weather over the cold weather. There's something about being out there when it's cold and the rain is drizzling and stuff. That's where I enjoy the job the least.
How do you communicate with the golfer? I mean, there's a relationship there between a caddy and a golfer. Are you able to pick up on what type of golfer you're caddying for at the very beginning?
Yeah. And you know, even more so than what kind of golfer they are, you know, what kind of personality they are, you can tell really quickly if they're going to be somebody who wants a lot of help. You know, you'll have some players who will not make a move until you give them direction. And then there's others who ask for very, very little. And you can tell would even be annoyed if you offered more. I would say that's probably a challenge as a young caddy or a new caddy. Sometimes they give too much information to golfers who are a little more independent. And you can tell really right away who is a really consistent and talented golfer, who's going to be just a horrible hacker. And then also, I would say where most players fall in is that they, you know, they hit a lot of good shots and they hit a lot that they'd rather have back. It's just inconsistent. You can see there's some talent there. You can see they played plenty, and yet, you know, they have real live jobs and families and stuff, so they're not as consistent as they'd like to be. So you can pick up on those things pretty quickly. And then you try to read the players for what they're looking for. You know, so like, for example, on the greens, there are some players who take advantage of having a caddy and want very, very precise reads on every putt. And then there's others where it's like, okay, they know they're not going to hit the line every time. They don't feel like, you know, playing the game or putting on a charade. So they just want a general, okay, it's going right to left or whatever. And then there's others who will ask you maybe one or two times around for something. And I think a good caddy is one who is going to try to pick up on all that.
Is it true that putts always break towards the water? I mean, being along Lake Michigan there, I don't think that at Whistling Straits they always break towards the lake, do they?
No, they really don't. And so that's where you can build up some trust with your players, though, because say the first read that you give them that, you know, says, no, it's not going to go towards the water. And then they find out that you were right. That really actually kind of helps, because for a lot of people where they play, it pretty much always goes towards the water, you know? And so that's an example of where maybe you can gain some credibility or some trust.
You've got a book that you wrote. Tell me a little bit about that book.
Yeah.
What's inside it?
I mentioned earlier that I went through a rough patch in life and fell into caddying out of desperation. And so early on when I started caddying, I thought, you know, there's a book in there somewhere. And my first instinct was what probably a lot of people would think of for a caddy book is just tell a bunch of crazy stories. And there's no doubt that there's an element of that in the book, but it really broadened in scope to be a book about myself and how a lot of healing and growth and hope were found out on the golf course, and really how golf and life intersect so much. So much of what you see out on the golf course in behaviors of players, you know, you can translate into how we react in our own lives in just everyday circumstances. And so I've learned from the good and the bad, tried to apply those lessons to myself, and out of it was born Caddy Tales. And so I've really appreciated the feedback that I've received on the book so far. There's been a lot of positive reviews, and I wasn't sure what to expect. I had no baseline for, you know, how many books they're successful to sell or anything like that. I just thought, you know, this will be a cathartic experience for me, and it was certainly that. And it's been a lot of fun now to get out and talk about it and try to sell a few, and then to also hear from people who have messaged me and said, man, I could really see myself in that. That's been maybe an unexpected reward of the book, is I've received a ton of messages on Twitter from people who said, man, this was not what I expected, but it was so much better. It really helped me, or I was in the same situation. And it's been a really cool thing to be a part of.
For the listeners, how can they get the book, and when do they need to order to get it by Christmas?
Okay, so the easiest way is to just go to Amazon and search for Caddy Tales. And, you know, I have noticed now they're not quite two-day shipping on the book. It's taking a little longer for that. So I would say certainly give yourself at least a week lead time. Many people are choosing to contact me directly through Twitter, at Caddy Tales. At Caddy Tales is my account, and they're asking for a personalized book, and that has really blown me away. I mean, I am not vain enough to have thought anybody would want that, and yet there was some people who reached out, and so that's been pretty fun. So if people want that, then I'd say let's try to get it ordered. First DM me and then try to get it ordered by December 15th at the latest.
What is actually, I mean, you gave a little bit in there, but are there some actual stories inside of Caddy Tales of your walks with a golfer that you can share?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I share about all the hole-in-ones that I've witnessed and how the players' reactions to them differed. I shared, you know, kind of the best player that I've seen out there. And I talk about, feats of, amazing feats of how much players have drank on the course and live to tell about it. And then maybe how they weren't so great the next day. So there's all kinds of those types of stories, you know, and a lot about like you know, players who've had a meltdown and how, you know, we can see ourselves in that, including a player I talk about who had a whole lot of birdies and then had one bad hole. And that one bad hole took over everything in a way that was really unhealthy. And then I talk about others who, you know, just kind of went with the flow, realized golf is really, really hard. And so they were even keel and things turned around for them. And so the back nine was a whole lot better than the front nine. And, you know, I think we can learn from both kinds of examples.
Yeah, no doubt. All right. Look, I've got a couple of quick hitters here for you.
Yeah.
Favorite hole at Whistling Straits.
It has evolved, but I'm going to say when the waves are crashing, hole number 7, a par 3, along the rocks on the water.
Yeah, that's a pretty one, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
Can you get lost on that tee box, though, just looking out over the lake?
Yeah, you know, I think people just get so intimidated that you've seen them hit the ball well the first 6 holes, and then that lake there to the right makes them take that next shot awfully far left.
Best shot you've ever seen a player hit?
I am going to have to go with the hole-in-one that I saw on hole 17.
What happened there?
It was in a very strong wind and would never have thought, you know, it was a good 3 or 4 club wind in the face at the end of a very long day and a very average, below average golfer, and just steps up and hits the ball so pure and draws it in like it looks on television, and one bounce, hole in one. And I wouldn't have believed it if I wasn't there to see it. But that was just truly remarkable. I'll never forget it.
What was that reaction like from the golfer?
Oh, it was kind of like a football celebration. There was a dad and 3 sons, and they were all young college guys, and so it had a little more of a you know, hype than other hole-in-one reactions I've seen. I get excited for all of them.
Oh, of course, no doubt about it. Heaviest bag you've ever carried? How much did it weigh?
Oh gosh, I'm not sure exactly how much it weighed, but I know we have as a suggested weight on the course 25 pounds for a bag. And so using that as a base, I'm going to say this bag weighed 50 pounds. I mean, it was like just absolutely ridiculous to have on the shoulder. But the heaviest I've picked up, I mean, there was one and a guy would not change it out. And we finally had to tell him it couldn't be carried. I could barely lift it onto my shoulders. And it was unbelievable. I don't even know what that had to be, but if there had to be bricks or whatever in there, but there are some people who care a great deal, almost bend over backwards. And then there's others who don't give a second thought the fact that that bag is going to get lugged around for a lot of miles.
So the lightest bag that you've ever carried, how light was it?
Oh gosh, probably for like an 11-year-old kid. You had a little junior bag and not even a full set of clubs or whatever. And it, you know, like those kind of days, you feel like you're not even working.
Does a good caddy always have another golf ball ready to go?
I would say that's a good idea, but I would say that I have not always accomplished that goal.
When the Ryder Cup was there, what was that like?
You know, the buildup was more fun than even the actual event for like the caddies who were there seeing the buildings go up and then, the stands and the chateaus and all that. And then, talking about what kind of shots people were going to hit. Like, for instance, the conversation had happened more than once about whether Bryson DeChambeau could drive the first green, and then he did. And so
cool. That got answered.
Yeah. And then the actual event, a lot of caddies avoided it, and it was pretty, you know, so many people there. And so maybe for people like us who are there every day, the convenience of watching from home or at a watering hole or whatever beat being at the actual course.
Worst conditions you've ever caddied in?
This year we had a storm roll in. There wasn't even in the forecast, and it was like a 10-15 minute storm, and we were on the 14th hole on the Irish course, and we were like on the tee box, we even said, oh, we don't think that's gonna hit, you know, it's going north. And by the time we got to the 14th green, there was standing water on the green, and we walked back to the clubhouse in shin deep water. So that's how quickly it can turn out there. But besides that, there's just been a number of times where you're out there where the wind is blowing at, you know, 40 miles an hour, and it's cold and drizzly, and they all just, you know, you can't quantify them. They're all just equally horrible.
Best player you've ever caddied for. Was it a professional or was it an amateur?
It was an amateur, yeah. Though I guess I did this year caddy for a guy who had played on the PGA Tour back in the day and the Champions Tour. He was pretty impressive. But the one that always stands out, and I write about him in Caddy Tales, was an amateur. He had played college golf, but he had never gone pro.
Who was it?
He had played at the University of Virginia back in the day. So his name was Conrad, but I can't remember his last name. But and he was funny. He was cool. He was laid back. And so I think that made him stand out too. But shot a 69 twice on the straights and from the blue tees. And that doesn't happen very often.
What makes a good caddy player relationship work?
Yeah, I like it when it's, you know, a back and forth where it's, you know, more of a conversation than them just turning to you and expecting you to have some sort of, you know, golden ticket. And so, you know, hey, this is what I see. This is what I think. What about you? And you collaborate. That to me is the healthiest, most successful way to have a round. The hardest is simply when a player is so intense and doesn't acknowledge like the caddy for anything good, but man, the minute a bad shot happens, they just turn and glare at you. It adds some, I don't know, fear's the right word, but you do kind of pucker up a little bit when you're in a situation where you're working for a gratuity and stuff. You don't want to upset them, but you can see that they're kind of a little bit of a powder keg. And so that's not so much fun. But yeah, I like a collaboration where you guys just talk back and forth and come up with the best option.
What player has traveled the furthest to come play the Whistling Straits that you caddied for?
You know what? This year was a weird, I on the same day, and it was random, two single players, which is very rare, because most our people are in a couple or a foursome, and it's very rare to be able to get onto the course as a one ball. But this one happened to have two guys who didn't know each other. They were each here separately, so they finished up the foursome. So I caddied for each of them, and one was from New Zealand and one was Hong Kong. And that just was crazy to happen on the same day. And it was awesome. I mean, but I felt like an ambassador, and it was great.
All right, Mark, favorite golf course you've ever played?
Well, Whistling Straits. But besides that, I would say probably up in northern Michigan, like Bay Harbor.
It's just pretty up there.
Yeah, Michigan doesn't have the golf, you know, the elite top 100 courses that have started to pop up in Wisconsin, or it doesn't at least have, you know, Erin Hills and Whistling Straits and all the buzz they've had lately. But it's pound for pound, Michigan's an amazing, amazing golf state. And so a lot of courses that I've played there up north, I have a special place in my heart.
All right, fantasy foursome, living or deceased, three other golfers you could play around a golf with, who would it be?
Oh, boy. Well, I'm going to just stick with golfers, and I'd say Tiger Woods. John Daly, I find him to be fascinating. And then either Rory or Phil.
How about that?
Yeah, that would be something else. But I often think about John Daly, you know, when we're on the seventh hole, the hole where he famous hole where he threw his club in the water and stuff. I just marvel at the fact that he's still alive, I guess. I don't mean to be like too irreverent there, but I just think it'd be fascinating to spend a day with him. And then on the flip side, I think just, you know, I'm the same age as Tiger Woods, and you just feel like he's kind of
always been there and been a part of your life. You know, it's, you know, how could you not have him in there?
Yeah, he's pretty good, isn't he?
Yeah, yeah.
All right, last thing for you here. If people want to come and play the Straits and they want you to be their caddy, how can they make that happen? Can they just DM you on Twitter?
Yeah, that's the easiest way, is just to do that. Otherwise, when they're making a reservation, they can just ask for me, and they'll work it out there through the reservations office. But the easiest way is just to get in contact with me directly.
Mark, thanks so much for coming on From the Shortgrass.
Yeah, I really appreciate you having me. Be well.
I'm Thomas Blackman with Blackman Auctions. I've heard it said that sometimes there are two best days with real estate ownership. It's the day you buy it and the day you sell it. Depending on where you are in your journey, let me help. If you're looking for that outdoor getaway or that home in the city, I can help. If you're looking at selling that outdoor property you haven't seen in 3 years, I can help. Or selling that home in the city that you've outgrown, I can help. Blackman Auctions is your one-stop real estate company. Since 1938, better auctions are Blackman Auctions.
Traveling to Fayetteville to watch a game? Forgot to book a room for the night? Beachwood Pinnacle Hotel Group has you covered. Stay where the fans stay. Stayridge Suites is just south of Baum Walker Stadium and is an all-suite hotel within walking distance of Baum Walker, Bud Walton, and Razorback Stadium. Or you could stay at the Comfort Inn and Suites with newly remodeled rooms throughout the entire property. Find them on the web at bphotels.com. Beachwood Pinnacle Hotels.
Strength is measured not by the number of accounts. Strength is placing value on relationships. It's having the vision and the guts to invest in growth. It's the commitment to responsibly manage your money. At Stevens, we believe that our strengths build success, not only for us, but for our clients. Stevens, member NYSE, SIPC.
Welcome back to this edition of From the Shortgrass. I am your host, Trey Schapp. Beachwood Pinnacle Hotel Group, Blair Allen, Matthew Allen, they know how to manage hotel properties. When you need an overnight place to stay, go to their website, bphotels.com. Look on there, find a place that's close to where you're needing an overnight place to stay, and book it. I guarantee you, you will be glad you did. They know how to manage hotel properties. And so go to their website, bphotels.com. When you need an overnight place to stay, find one of the properties they manage and book it. And as I said, you will be glad you did. Did you get a chance to watch any of the golf from the Bahamas? How about Tiger Woods back on the course there at the Hero World Challenge? It was good to see Tiger back on the course. He made some birdies, he made some bogeys, and he made some double bogeys. But it was good to see Tiger Woods back out competing, and hopefully Tiger will be able to play like he says he wants to, maybe once a month, once the summer months get here and the PGA Tour schedule really starts to get going. You know he's going to want to play in the majors, of course, and he'll probably play the Players' Championship at TPC Sawgrass, but it's good to see Tiger Woods back on the course. He is so good for the game of golf. Another golfer it was good to see was Will Zalatoris. He went to the long putter, and Zalatoris, coming off of back surgery that he had last year, had to withdraw from the Masters tournament, if you will remember, in 2023, April of 2023, the Masters tournament there in Augusta, Georgia, withdrew from it, had back surgery, and recently started swinging the club again and getting back into shape. And that's one guy that I think if he gets his game back and if he can play pain-free, look out for him. I know that first tournaments, hey, look, anything can happen, but I like Will Zalatoris' golf game. That will do it for this edition of From the Shortgrass. As always, remember, when you find your ball mark on the green, fix it and a couple of more, and I hope to see you sometime soon from the Shortgrass.
You've been listening to From the Shortgrass, a weekly podcast dedicated to the game of golf. This has been a presentation of the Buzz Radio Network.